CKUT's annual funding drive runs Thursday, March 18th to Sunday, March 28th. Our programmers have been working hard at home all year, and it's time to celebrate their efforts. The theme of our first ever online drive is sowing the seeds of grassroots change, and we're asking you to support independent community media. Help us reach our goal of $25,000. Go to cket.ca to donate today.
Sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds, sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, March 18th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, Amy Blackmore, executive and artistic director at Mainline Theatre, on the grand reopening of theaters in Montreal.
It's an experience to hear that it's real. I was said to somebody earlier today that I was, you know, jumping for joy, but also wanted to go run and hide in my closet. Like, you know, I'm very torn about it all. And I think folks in the community are as well.
Emma Tibaldo of Playwrights Workshop Montreal on Dara Tidal's new play about power and woman behavior.
It changed my world. It changed the way I look at my past. It really did make things concrete that were fluid for me. So I'm forever grateful to this play and to Dara for putting it forward and to having the courage to do it in the way that she's done it. She's done it her way.
Before we get started, our funding drive at CKUT kicks off today. Sowing the seeds of grassroots change is our theme from 2021. That's actually the theme from last year's funding drive, which got scrapped as the world ground to a halt during the pandemic. I'm asking you to consider lending a hand to Upstage and CKUT. The station is a nonprofit campus community radio station and is largely powered by volunteers like myself. But of course, the station still requires dollars and cents to literally keep the lights on. From rent and utilities, buying and upgrading equipment, renting our broadcast tower, and the salaries for our small staff. As you likely know, it's nearly been a year since we all started broadcasting from home. With the pandemic, the station and its offices have been shut. Last year's funding drive was canceled. And if you're wondering, how does it work if I, Sarah, don't go into the station? Well, just as theater companies and artists have had to go online to share new work, I've also had to adjust. Every week, I interview my guests, cut the audio, and record my voice from home. And then I send the finished package to Tamara, our culture spoken word editor, who makes sure it actually gets broadcasted on the airwaves. Your support helps with her salary and the broadcast tower that makes sure the show gets out. CKUT staff have helped me adjust to the new reality of recording from home, and I can't wait to be back in the studio again soon. But like we've all learned to adjust and learn new skills in the past year or so, I've had a lot of support from the station to be able to do that. Now, as for our show, Upstage is one of the few outlets in Montreal completely devoted to English language theater, including big theater productions and indie shows, community and student theater, comedy, as well as Francophone productions as well. Your support is not only a show of support for CKUT and the many diverse voices it hosts, as well as my work as a volunteer covering theater. And if I may be so bold, also a pledge to the arts community, which has been radically impacted by COVID-19. Upstage is a home for local theater. The goal is to promote and support the work of local artists, up-and-coming artists, veteran artists, but to also keep you, the listener, the most important person here, up to date with new productions. The big ask this year is $30 for 30 Seeds of Change, but you can contribute however much you want. $30 lands you one entry into the grand prize draw at the end of the drive. And every amount after that, there are goodies to go along with it, $60, an entry into the grand prize draw and a 2021 campaign t-shirt, $90, an entry, a tee and a bag, and so on. There's even monthly plans. Even I donate a little bit of money every month through the year because I believe so much in my show, in my station, and also the other shows that are bringing you music, culture, news from a variety of different perspectives. Three ways to donate. You can call 514-448-4013, visit ckut.ca online, and also by mail, Radio CKUT 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. For more information, funding.ckut.ca. It's all there, the prizes, the grand prize draw, what your money goes towards specifically helping. It's all there online, funding.ckut.ca. I hope you can help out in the end. The station's goal is $25,000, and Upstage has its own goal too. Anything you can give is a show of support for CKUT, as well as the theater scene in this city. The drive continues until March 28th. Huge news this week. Premier François Legault gave the green light for theaters and arts venues in Montreal and other red zones to reopen as of next Friday, March 26th. Cinemas have already been open, and venues in orange zones with lower transmission of the virus had reopened a few weeks back already, so this measure has been hotly anticipated. And of course, there is still a curfew, but it has been rolled back from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., making it eminently easier to see shows and get back home in time for the curfew. So, what is there to see? Centaur Theatre is bringing back Mob, the show that went dark exactly a year ago as the province shut down. Catherine Anne Toupin's play about a woman recovering from the anger of an internet mob will be staged with the same three performers, Adrienne Richards, Matthew Cabway, and Susan Bain. Eight shows from March 26th to April 3rd. Tickets go on sale tomorrow, Friday, at noon. Centaur's artistic and executive director, Ida Holmes, said, "After a year of living almost entirely online, we have realized that we desperately need to be in the same room to tell each other our stories. We need it not only for our own spirits, but for the health of society as a whole. The artists are ready to jump back on stage and tell those stories so that we can rebuild our world together." Now, if you're curious, the guidelines for seeing the show are pretty stringent. Socially distance seating. Audience members will sanitize their hands and get new masks at the entrance, as well as being screened to confirm they are symptom-free upon arrival. The ventilation system has been upgraded in the theater and public space, and sadly but logically, there is no bar service. Tickets are $58 plus service charges. You can get yours at centaurtheater.com. And I just think this is so perfectly symbolic that this show, which is actually about communication and what gets lost online in communities, having halted a week into its run, is now coming back exactly a year later as we are trying to restore the sense of normalcy. Théâtre Sainte-Catherine, this small space that mostly does improv and sketch and also some musical stuff too, they say they are planning to reopen. La Licorne is going to present Steve Gagnon's Les Étés Souterrains, starring lauded film and TV actress Guylaine Tremblay in her very first solo show. Tickets go on sale Monday and the show starts March 30th. It's a Théâtre de la Manufacture production. And as vaccination ramps up in Montreal, and with lower case counts being reported every day, and as well the arrival of spring in just a few days from now, the reopening of theaters is a breath of fresh air and optimism for theater fans and the industry itself. But of course, we are not out of the woods yet. Some companies may not be ready to host audiences in person, and some performers may not be comfortable being on stage. This week, the Premier also announced, well, promised at the exact same announcement, that all adults will have their first dose of the COVID vaccine by June 24th, Fête Nationale, an ambitious goal but achievable, according to some observers. And the mayor of Montreal today pledged millions of dollars to relaunch the city's downtown core this summer. The head of the Quartier des Spectacles partnership was present at the announcement. Last week, I told you that Monique Simard led an open letter from 33 downtown venues asking for a reopening. So her presence today suggests that there will be some semblance of a summer festival season, though, of course, with restrictions in place. We are still a ways away from being back to normal, but we are taking those first few steps. Amy Blackmore is executive and artistic director of Mainline Theatre on the Boulevard on Saint-Laurent, the Main. It also operates the Saint-Ambroise Fringe Festival. As a leader in the theatre community, I wanted to get her take on the reopening plan. There is some optimism, but there's also, of course, some skepticism. Amy spoke with me yesterday. Amy, welcome back to Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well. I'm overwhelmed, but I'm doing well. It's nice to be here.
Where were you when you heard the news yesterday?
Wow. Well, I actually heard the news a little bit ahead of the public. I was sitting at my computer and the news kind of just came in through dark channels. No, just joking. But, you know, the government did give a heads up to some associations. So I was in the loop. And I have to say, I heard the news from Nathalie Roy, our Minister of Culture herself. And she was so excited. She was so happy. It was like Christmas morning for her, I think, when she shared what was going on.
Oh, that's great. You must really feel like with that kind of reaction, like the culture minister is in your corner.
I think so. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's definitely been a challenging year for everyone. And I think what this has really caused is way more communication between some government channels and these different arts and culture associations out there. I know that I'm personally feel way more plugged in able to advocate for the arts and for theater. And I hope that beyond the pandemic that will continue.
Bit of a silver lining, I guess, that in dire straits and troubled times, the lines of communication have been strengthened.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I was curious to know about, you know, before we got this announcement about arts venues being able to reopen, we had in the orange zones, Montreal is red, where things were not as bad, you know, venues opened up a lot sooner, I guess, in the last couple of weeks. Was there a lot of anticipation and pressure talk in the theater community in Montreal about also getting the green light to go ahead?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'd hate to say that. I dislike the idea, you know, of saying that folks are divided. I think that I know that for myself, even within myself, I'm a little divided. Everyone was ready to hear that we were going to open up. We knew it was coming. You know, a few weeks ago, we were told it was coming. But it's definitely it's an experience to hear that it's real. You know, I said to somebody earlier today that I was, you know, jumping for joy, but also wanted to go run and hide in my closet. Like, you know, I'm very torn about it all. And I think folks in the community are as well.
And I guess that that tug of war is safety, but also wanting to get back to work.
It's absolutely that, you know, I think safety for sure. And even with protocols in place, you know, there are folks that don't want to take risks. But at the same time, it's, you know, for me, when I think about this, reopening a theater doesn't necessarily mean that there's support for the entire infrastructure that is theater. I'm still really worried about the artists, about folks who've had to leave the industry and take on other work. You know, will they come back and will there be work for them? And, you know, I've heard stories of artistic directors having, you know, double seasons next season, you know, in some theaters. And there's so much work that's ready to go or that folks want to put up on stage. I just hope that there's going to be enough room for it all. I know that for me, you know, I'm definitely excited to start seeing things again. But yeah, it's again, still confusing.
And Amy, when you mean to clarify, when you say double seasons, does that mean that, you know, the work that was destined for, let's say, 2019, 2020, 2021 being put off, like that's still on the table, but at the same time, companies have been developing other things for 2021, 2022. And so
absolutely,
we're talking about squeezing in like a year and a half's worth of content into one season.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of plans that were in place for the season that didn't happen. And, you know, I think there are projects, you know, I mean, I can speak for myself, you know, I have some of my own projects that, you know, we will not come to fruition. But then there's others that will. And, you know, I think there's definitely more than enough content out there for artistic directors to be programming right now, because essentially there's double content.
Mm. There's already whispers of, you know, the roaring 20s akin to 100 years ago, post World War I, where people have been maybe saving money, they're ready to spend, or they're ready to, they haven't dated in a year, so they're ready to get out and party and meet people. All kind of, you know, that can channel into so many different things. Is there anticipation that, you know, there'll be pent up demand to see performances in person?
I think absolutely. I think that the demand is going to be huge. People want to gather. It's in our nature to do so. You know, on St. Patrick's, I was walking around the neighborhood and everyone was out. The sunshine brings people out of their houses and, you know, folks want and crave and are waiting for it. You know, I believe it is going to be quite the roaring 20s.
I'm wondering a bit about, because we talk a lot about English theater, primarily on Upstage, and that's the world that you're in, but with The Fringe, you really bridge the two solitudes, as we might say, in the theater community, French and English, and multilingual theater. Will there be two tracks in terms of reopening? I know that Centaur is planning to reopen Mob. I got a press release today about Guylaine Tremblay being in her first ever solo show. So I think tickets go on sale sometime next week. You know, will the French and English theater worlds be reopening at the same time?
I think they will. I think that we're moving forward together. And I think there's a lot of, again, collaboration that's taken place within this past year that have brought our communities closer and closer together. I know that, you know, again, for myself, I'd recently joined the CQT board and sit on their executive committee. The CQT is the Conseil Québécois du Théâtre, and mm-hmm. I'm personally very committed to continuing to bring our two communities together, you know, between QDF and the CQT, of course. But when it comes to the actual theaters themselves, I think that that is what we're going to see. It'll be a rollout together. Not everyone's going to be ready to come out. That's okay. I think that we're still going to see offerings online. It won't only be in person, but it will definitely be together.
And and when you say offerings online, do you think that that'll be partly because I think especially smaller companies having invested in producing content for online, the people are going to want to kind of, artists will want to stick with some of the skills they've picked up or the equipment that they've learned to use over the last year?
Yeah, I think so. There's something fun about online in that you can really get DIY about it. You can do it yourself. And it's, you don't have to rent a theater to do it. So, you know, I think actually, you know, on the flip side, I think of a company like Teledote Theater who did their work outside last summer en pointe, which, you know, went really well. I think that outdoor theater is going to continue as well. You know, there's so many fun things. Again, you know, to use the line silver linings that you used earlier, we're discovering fun things that we want to interact with in the theater arts more and more. So there'll be a diverse offering. At the same time, I think there will still be more online work because I think our audience desires it. Not everyone is going to be able to come out right away. You know, not everyone is going to be vaccinated right away. So I think that's going to take time. But the beauty behind it too is that there's an accessibility layer here to to the conversation, whereas somebody who is unable to leave their home, if they do have access to the technology, you know, they'll be able to still participate and be a part of our community. I hope that's something that continues.
I think that's a really excellent point as well, because in the conversations around accessibility, you know, that's something that maybe wasn't discussed as much before, is that some people aren't able to actually be in person. And things like talks and lectures that are connected with pieces, those are often on Facebook, but the performances themselves have always kind of been, you had to be there in the theater, right? And that's adapting. I'm speaking with Amy Blackmore, who is executive and artistic director at Mainline Theater. Also, head honcho at Fringe Festival, St. Amboise. We are speaking, you just mentioned St. Patrick's Day and it being sunny out. So it is March 17th tomorrow when this interview is going to air. We will already have heard from the City of Montreal in terms of a plan for summer festivals. Now, so we're in the past, looking ahead to the future. The Fringe is definitely part of the summer season. I'm not sure, I don't know if you've heard anything in advance, the way you kind of heard about the reopenings, but what is your general feeling about there being a summer season or not?
Oof, it's loaded. There's so much. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, I know that there will be summer festivals. They're going to look radically different. You know, and everyone is starting to put their plans in place. And now that we, you know, now that the theaters are reopening, we're kind of feeling like there's a go button that's been pressed. You know, we've definitely been in touch with other festivals and events to hear what they're doing and to kind of have a little bit of a back and forth again in the spirit of collaboration that's taking place right now. But yeah, we will have a summer festival season. You know, I'm not expecting to cram in at the Jazz Fest. I don't think that's what's going to happen. Yeah. But there will definitely be offerings taking place.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned vaccinations and about how, you know, not everyone necessarily might be comfortable. Not everyone will be vaccinated. The timeline that was updated this week is that our premier wants that every adult who wants to have the vaccine will at least have their first dose by June 24th, Saint Jean Baptiste, which is when Fringe Festival has usually just wrapped up by. We're not public health experts or doctors, but is it kind of strange to see, you know, a public health issue like vaccinations kind of, it's kind of in lockstep with reopening, right? Like, we need to have everybody fully vaccinated in order for 100% full venues to come back.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think the first thing I want to say on that is that Legault really loves a good soundbite. You know, saying that everyone will be vaccinated by Saint Jean. I mean, it's a good soundbite. I was like, good for you, when I heard that quote. I, you know, again, yeah, I'm not a health expert, as you said, and you know, I think what's good that is happening right now is that we do have clear guidelines of, you know, how to bring folks into our spaces. You know, for example, I got a text from a friend earlier today saying, oh my goodness, 250 people in a room. And it's like, well, it's 250, but if the room has the capacity to do it with the social distancing in place, you know, a meter and a half between patrons or bubbles, everybody wearing a mask, and various protocols such as, you know, when you purchase a ticket for a show, you'll need to stay in your assigned seat. There's no moving chairs over for dancing is something I keep hearing folks say. So, I mean, I think that it's a slow reopen. It's not like we're just, it's not like the floodgates are open and everybody's running in. This is going to be a slow, calculated step because we need to get the economy moving again. We need to sell tickets. We need to pay artists. And I think it's time to do it in a calculated and really safe way.
And you're already getting support from the government to begin with, right, in terms of reopening. So why not reopen, right? Like, there is government support from the province to venues.
There is support, yeah. We definitely have received some. I'll say I wish there was more, I'm not going to lie. You know, looking ahead at the 30th anniversary of the Fringe, figuring out the economics around that is going to be tough. You know, we know now that there's most likely not going to be the beer tent as we know it. And, you know, there won't be late night dance parties. And, you know, the ways, you know, at the Fringe, it's the artists that receive 100% of their box office. So we're going to have to be, I think, really creative in looking at the picture of it all to pull it off.
Absolutely. One thing that just occurred to me is, you know, we've kept schools open and businesses open as much as, you know, the message is if people can work from home, have them work from home. Personally, I've been going to work through the pandemic. I know a lot of people have. And so you almost kind of think, well, if some offices and some settings can continue to operate, you know, albeit there have been outbreaks in workplaces and in schools, of course, you know, why can't we be in a venue for an hour, 2 hours, sitting separately, wearing masks? Like if we can do it at work and school, we can do it at the theater or at the cinema.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a good question. And again, it's about comfort zones too. It's, you know, what is somebody comfortable with? You know, I have folks in my family who, you know, have a suppressed immune system. So for me, you know, it's going to have to be a decision when I walk into a room. You know, it means that I have to make certain sacrifices. You know, I personally, I've worked from home this entire time. So again, I think it's about folks really self-evaluating and making their decisions and their choices. You know, I really believe in choice and being able to you know, offer. I always like it when somebody's offered a variety of possibilities and then they get to choose one within that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're going to see happen.
Well, Amy, we're not back to normal just yet, but we got a big optimistic step forward this week. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Amy Blackmore, Executive and Artistic Director of Mainline Theatre on St. Laurent in the Plateau. Visit mainlinetheatre.ca for more information. I'm Sarah DeA. You are listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. We kicked off our funding drive today. Please consider donating to show your support for CKUT, nonprofit community radio, as well as Upstage, a home for theater in Montreal. To donate, you can call 514-448-4013, visit CKUT.ca, or mail us, Radio CKUT, 3647 University, Montreal QC, H3A2B3. There is something there for you as well. If you donate, you can be entered into our grand prize draw for $30. If you donate more, you can also net yourself a cool Funding Drive t-shirt or a bag. Visit funding.ckut.ca for more details. A timely and important new play hits the stage virtually this weekend. The Siegel Center is presenting A Reading of Behavior, a Playwrights Workshop Montreal production. Writer Dara Title introduces you to Mara, a young woman living out her dream to work in politics on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. But even as Mara tries to change the world for the better, she comes up against abuse of power and has to find a way to make her voice and truth heard in a world that would rather she shut up. Emma Tibaldo is both director and dramaturg for Behavior. She spoke with me earlier today. Welcome to Upstage, Emma. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time. So this is a very current play. I was noticing in the notes, Kelly Nestrick of the Globes called Behavior one of the smartest plays to respond to the Me Too movement. So this is kind of striking with the iron is hot. Can you tell me about Mara, the woman we meet in Behavior?
Dara wrote this play before the Me Too movement, or at least the first part of the play before the Me Too movement. So it was at a time when she was really outraged, well, obviously still is, about the fact that women are abused and that it remains silent. So she wrote this play, and Mara, who is the character of the play, is a professional working in Parliament as a staffer, and she's been conditioned over her life to accept certain abusive behavior, and it affects who she is in the world. So she's part of what the play is trying to do is trying to let us as an audience notice all the microaggressions that she goes through that make her who she is, or that contribute to her being who she is and moving through the world the way she does. And then as we watch her life unravel, her professional and personal life unravel, we hopefully understand that this is not something that she called upon herself, but something that has been put on her and that she has to work her way through, or find a way through. Hard to work your way through abuse, but find her way through. Yeah.
So Dara's putting the onus on her character. Why do you think she chose to do it that way? That you just said that Mara's the one who has to work her way through sexism and power imbalances.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that she has to work her way through that, but she has to work her way through the trauma of what's being done to her. So she has to come to the realization of what's happening to her, and then she has to take the power of changing that. Yeah. And truthfully, the play really does look at what are the options for women once they come to a place where they understand the extent of the abuse, and that there isn't a clear way for women to find justice, because they're not believed, or because the onus is on their story, or the system is set up so that there are non-disclosure clauses, so you can't talk about things, which, you know, is a fairly central part of this play as well. This idea of how does the non-disclosure clause silence women, because they're in desperate need for recompense. But in order to get that, they have to be silent. So it's looking at that as well.
I think the Harvey Weinstein allegations in particular, that was a recurring thing, that women had signed NDAs and were not able to talk, or they would face legal repercussions, which is so terrifying, because you think you own your narrative and what happened to you, but actually, according to this dotted line, maybe you don't.
Yeah, and you don't, and they can put you through lawsuits and... for you completely. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So interesting choice to have this on Parliament Hill. We, you know, the halls of power for Canadian politics. Politics has not been a world immune to people speaking out and talking about, you know, relationships behind the scene and being marginalized. We've heard about so many things in the last couple of years. Was this setting, a political setting, particularly intriguing to you? Did you kind of learn anything about, you know, kind of the power dynamics that exist in this particular environment?
Yeah, I think what's true is that power can breed abuse. You know, we know that, and watching it happen, even in the places where we think are the most progressive and forward-thinking, like socialist parties, or parties of the like, is eye-opening. We don't want to believe that, but it does. And it becomes about individual power within systems. And so, yeah, it can happen anywhere, to anyone, at any time. And the play makes that very clear, that no one is immune, and that you may not even
recognize it, which I think is the most powerful part about this play, is that it does allow you, it gives you the time to look back on your own experiences and recognize them for what they were or what they are still in your body, for what that trauma, what the effect, what the residue of all of that is in terms of who you are and how you move around in the world. So, it does that brilliantly.
Speaking with Emma Tibaldo, director of a new play by Dara Title, relatively new play called Behavior, a production by Playwrights Workshop Montreal, coming up this weekend. You talked a little bit early on about what recourse you have and what options women have to kind of speak out. And oftentimes when a woman comes forward or someone comes forward and brings up allegations, things that were toxic, the power imbalances, there's a lot of like, well, why didn't you do this, or why wasn't this done? And it's so fascinating because it's like always 2020 looking back, and I feel like critics and people who wonder aloud about why wasn't this option followed instead, this would have been the right thing to do, they don't seem to put themselves in the mindset of, you know, if you were being traumatized or harassed or abused, you know, you might have trouble figuring out what the right path is to take. Is that a little bit of what Mara is navigating?
Absolutely, all the way through. And where she gets to once she makes those discoveries and owns them, it is quite fascinating in the play. So the last, the third part of the play is post realization and just trying to move forward. So you get a sense, it's almost like real-time feeling through her experience, understanding it, getting to the place of recognition, and then what happens after. And the what happens after is set in her home with her grandmother. So it becomes sort of a look into, where do we get our power? Where do we get our strength? And where do we also get those character traits that allow us either not to recognize things as abnormal. That's also part of it. So it's the play actually takes you through this huge journey of watching it happen, understanding why it's happening, then understanding where she gets to, and then after that, figuring out what do you do next, and what are the hurdles, and what are the compromises that you have to do, because the world, yes, still does not allow you to come out and say, I was sexually abused, and for that to be enough.
This kind of rewriting that happens in the public discourse when someone brings forward, especially bombshell allegations against someone who's, you know, high up power-wise, this rewriting and this questioning, that must have really interested you as a drama, like intellectually, because you're also the dramaturg on this project as well as the director, in terms of stories and how stories get questioned and choices get questioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think this play intrigued me from the get-go in terms of form. It's also written in a way that's unexpected. The first part of it are short, really intense scenes that get to the heart of the matter. Right. Then there's a huge monologue, and then it goes into a farce, and then there's a fairly physical epilogue. And just watching her move through the different kinds of theatrical expressions in order to get a message across, then looking at time as very elastic, it moves in a very elastic way. A day can take up, you know, a fair amount of space in the play, and then 9 months can take up a very small amount of space, so that you're constantly trying to battle of when you are in the play and when the character is in the play, because frankly, everything becomes one. Like abuse, if you're in it long enough, becomes all of it becomes one. All of it becomes part of the same thing. So work harassment, sexual assault, you know, family dynamics and relationships all can become one thing in your mind. And frankly, all stem from the same place, you know, wanting to dominate someone. So yeah, watching her go through all this in a professional in her professional world, which, you know, we've seen tons of examples of, you know, we hope these are awesome human beings. They turn out not to be. And watching her deal with this on a personal level at home, watching her deal with it on a personal level with her husband, and then put into the mix a child, a newborn child that she is responsible for, and how that changes everything.
Okay.
As well. Yeah.
Speaking with Emma Tibaldo, who is the director and dramaturg for Behavior, coming this weekend. So what can we expect? This is going to be a reading. Are we seeing blocking as well for the piece?
No, it's absolutely a reading. Okay. It's a reading that is been thought through with digital. So there are obviously there will be digital elements. It's set up, I believe, in a very interesting way, in a mm-hmm. way that will carry you through. But you know, the character in the center is the play, and Amelia Sargeson as Mara is extraordinary, and the other actors are you know, so incredible and present. And so it's all about getting the story out into the world right now. And I think it's a reading, so it's set up as a reading. There's never any doubt where you are, so you're really paying attention to story. Done beautifully, I hope. I mean, I hope you all feel that way, but I do. Yeah, so I think it's about, you know, having a quiet space in front of your computer.
I saw Amelia Sargeson actually tweet about rehearsing and getting ready, and she was so excited to be in such a strange year, right, where a lot of actors aren't performing as much as they'd like. She was super excited to be getting ready for this particular production. Are you seeing that energy across the board with your cast and crew?
Yeah, they're all amazing. Everyone is, you know, exceptional. And so from Aaron Shields to Victor Trellis, Felicia Schulman and Amelia Sargeson, incredible. And Potato Cakes Digital has, you know, just been with us all the way through creating.
That's your digital dramaturg collective, Potato Cakes. What is a digital dramaturg collective?
Well, they work on everything digital right now in terms of getting things to live stream or creating the design of the digital production. They are, you know, designers. They're both designers, and they're both very interested in technology. So they have the skill set to understand how to make digital work for live stream, how to create a hybrid theatrical experience.
How to make it work on the computer.
How to make it work, yeah.
A bit of a kind of optimistic note this week, as we learned about live theater and, like, I guess, comedy and music returning. But I'm also thinking a lot about what we've learned over the past years. When I say we, I mean artists, what's been learned and picked up in skills in terms of creating visions for online, and how mm-hmm. to tell stories effectively to an audience, as you just said, sitting alone at home or with someone in front of the computer. Do you feel mm-hmm. like you've learned a lot over the past year, and are you hoping to keep some of the stuff, for example, that Potato Cakes brings to the game, right? Hoping mm-hmm. to keep that through for whenever we, you know, return to all being live.
Yeah, I think everything feeds into everything else, and accumulated experience and knowledge just makes everything move forward. I totally believe that. I don't think the future of theater is digital, but I think digital is a part of theater from here on in. And I think sharing platforms, I think being able to create versions of things that can be put over the internet so that more people can see it, more people can experience the stories, I think is amazing. Yeah, so no, we won't let any of this go. Absolutely, we're gonna build on it. It's part of what we've committed to. And yeah, Playwrights has been working really hard to be able to bring this information to the largest amount of artists possible. So yeah, it's important to us.
I think a lot of your audience is receptive to the story of a woman who's dealing with assault and abuse of power, but not everyone necessarily is on the same page. Are you going to change minds with Behavior?
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's what you hope every piece of theater does. It changed my world. It changed the way I look at my past. It really did make things concrete that were fluid for me. So I'm forever grateful to this play and to Dara for putting it forward and to having the, you know, the courage to do it in the way that she's done it. She's done it her way. And I think it's beautiful and brilliant and necessary mm-hmm. and entertaining and wildly funny. So,
well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about it, Emma. I'll let you get back to work because I know you are gearing up for this Saturday. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time and for your interest. Brilliant.
That was Emma Tibaldo, director and dramaturg of Behavior, at the Siegel Center this weekend, coming to you to your computer. A stellar cast. We have Emilia Sargeson as Mara, Victor Andres Trellis Turgeon as Evan, and Aaron Shields, the playwright, as Jordan, as well as Felicia Schulman in several roles. It's live streaming 3 times this weekend, Saturday at 5 and 8 p.m., and Sunday at 4 p.m. Tickets are pay what you can. Visit siegelcenter.org or 514-739-7944. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Thank you so much for joining me. Tonight you heard Amy Blackmore, Executive and Artistic Director at Mainline Theatre, home of the Montreal Fringe, and Emma Tibaldo of Playwrights Workshop Montreal. A very big thank you to my guests. And please consider making a contribution sometime in the next 10 days to our annual CKUT funding drive, sowing the seeds of grassroots change kicked off today. Donating is simple. Call 514-448-4013, visit ckut.ca, or mail us, Radio CKUT, 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. All methods of payment are accepted just about. We're hoping you'll contribute $30, which gets you an entry in our grand prize draw. $60 gets you an entry and a cool 2021 Funding Drive t-shirt. You can also contribute a little bit of money every month if you want. That's actually how I support the station and our mission. But any amount really helps keep the station's lights on and helps keep this show running as a space to hear about and promote theater in the city. Despite this time of uncertainty, Montreal artists have continued to work to adapt and create new ways to connect through the pandemic, and Upstage has been here to help document it. Any amount you can give helps keep this show on air. To close out the show, I wanted to bring back part of an interview with actress and writer Emilia Sargeson, who stars as Mara in Behavior, the play we just discussed with director Emma Tibaldo. The reading airs this weekend from the Siegel Center. Emilia's developing work was presented in a showcase for emerging writers at the Centaur in January as part of Wildside, and I thought she really encapsulated what a challenge this year has been for artists. Here is Emilia Sargeson. Good evening, Emilia. Welcome to Upstage. How have you been these past 10 months or so?
Hey, Sarah. Well, you certainly start with loaded questions.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, my journey over the past 10 months bankrupts language. We've all been riding these really huge ups and downs. But, I mean, all in all, I think I can say that I'm fortunate insofar as my loved ones have mostly been in good health. and I think that's the biggest priority for everyone these days. So, yeah.
You're right. It is a bit of a loaded question, and it's funny. Since March, that is honestly how I've started just about all of these interviews. And recently... that we do here on Upstage, and I recently thought to myself, maybe I should stop asking that. But once I'm talking to someone, it's just the first thing off the top of my mind, just because we're all going through such crazy changes. I mean, even people who, you know, might have still have a job to go to or like a hobby to do have still experienced some uncertainty, right? So it's hard to answer the question. It's normal. It's kind of hard in ordinary times as well. But we last saw you... Go ahead.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm all for asking big questions and real questions. And, you know, you're right to point out that, of course, it's at the forefront of your mind. You know, how have you been coping?
Amelia, you, I guess this is a privilege of sorts. You're one of the last performers we saw on stage before things kind of halted, right? With Paradise Lost in the months before the pandemic started. That was such a fun production. You were playing Eve. What was it like to come off of that? And it was huge, right? Like, how many people were on stage? What was it like to come off of doing a big work like that at the Centaur?
My whole journey with that play was and has been, and I think will forever be, one of the most profound and exhilarating creative experiences of my life. And what was really magical for me about the Centaur production was, you know, not only that I got to reprise what I had done at Stratford and, you know, go deeper, especially in my relationship with Adam, who was immortalized by my beloved friend, Qasim Khan, but that I got to bring it home and share it with a home audience and share it with some local artists who were stepping into the roles of some of the older cast. So that was just, the play itself just is so huge, right? Like, we go all across the cosmos, and the journey internally mirrors that for me.
So coming off working on a big production like Paradise Lost, what's your reality been like since, I guess not since March, but these past few months? Like, have projects been put on hold? Have you been doing other things at the same time? I know everyone has got some, have all been doing different projects to keep busy and to keep working.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say that it's been significantly more quiet. But I don't know, I was sort of thinking about how nature abhors a vacuum, and apparently so does Amelia. So I've found all kinds of other ways to fill the emptiness that opened when basically a year's worth of contracts evaporated. And what's been really joyful and what I'm so grateful for is that I've actually just been able to be a little bit more intentional and conscious about how I fill said vacuum, because I'm not just sort of blindly on the hamster wheel of chasing the next acting gig. So I've been able to do a lot more of my own writing, and I've always loved writing. I shouldn't say that. I've always been drawn to writing. I would say that I've always had a pretty fraught relationship with writing. But for me at this moment, something sort of aligned, and it became the only way that I could sort of grapple with the chaos was through the written word. So I started a little creative accountability group this summer with local playwright Alex Haber, and we would just meet every week on Zoom. And what was, you know, the one thing that Zoom has opened up is the ability to work with friends and colleagues across the country. So that was really exciting. We even had a friend of mine joining us from Detroit. So, you know, we started there, each of us sort of watering these little seedlings of ideas, and it's just been kind of wild to see how my own piece has grown and how some of the other pieces from that creative accountability group have also grown. So I've been doing, you know, that kind of thing, like more self-started projects.
Which is, it's just such a pivot, right, from being, as you were saying, you know, talking about contracts and being assigned up for different things, where you're counting on someone else to kind of push your creative process forward, because it's all teamwork, right? And in writing, it's so individual. How did you come to be in an accountability group? This is really interesting.
Well, I suppose that one of my creative role models and mentors was the springboard for the idea. Her name is Haley McGee, and she was actually in fourth year at Ryerson Theatre School, and I was in first year, so she's someone to whom I've always looked up. And she's now based in London, England, where she's a writer-performer. So she mostly does her own work and performs her own work. So she started right at the beginning of all of this, a 14-day creative quarantine challenge, which I did with great relish and learned after the fact that Alex Tabor had also been doing it simultaneously to me. So then we thought, well, you know, that was just so great to be able to check in with, you know, this cohort of international artists. We should do something like that for ourselves, to, you know, advance these projects, to push them to the next level. So it was just something that we talked about on a socially distant walk one afternoon, and then it came to pass. But we didn't want to give it too much structure, because I think everyone has just been metabolizing so much over the past little while that you don't want to do something that's burdensome or that's going to feel like extra work, but rather something that's just going to buoy people up and ignite the creativity. So we just decided that every week we'd sort of pass the baton to a different person in the group to come up with some creative tips and insights. And it was such a pleasure for me to see what, you know, ideas were percolating in my friends and colleagues. And I amassed it all into this big Word document at the end, so that we sort of have that as this inspo Bible if you're ever just sitting there ready to gouge your eyes out in front of the computer and not having any ideas. So, you know, it's just in the extra space, I feel like there has been some new birds.
I'm speaking with Amelia Sargeson, who is going to be part of Catalyst at Centaur coming up very shortly. And we're just talking about the writing process and how to keep track of it. I just was really curious about the accountability thing, because I know how difficult it can be, like from a personal perspective as well, to keep on yourself, to keep going, especially in this weird time where it seems like what's going on in the news and the wider world is so strange. Either you want to look away or you can't stop looking away. So having this kind of support must be just totally invaluable. And you're probably getting a ton of terrific feedback as well on works in progress. So pivoting, let's talk about the work you're going to be talking about with Rose as part of Catalyst. It's called For Shame. Is this something you've been working on for the last, like for something you've been thinking about for a long time, or is it a more recent development?
Well, I would say that the prompt for this actually came this summer when Ida Holmes, the artistic director of Centaur, put out a call for this particle project of outdoor performances. And she was asking for pieces on the theme of unpacking the self, unpacking the moment, you know, really any iteration that your imagination could drum up of unpacking. And something about it just set something off inside of me. And so I would say a fit of writing produced this little baby awkward draft that I submitted to the Portico project, and then and it was unsuccessful. I did not get into the Portico Festival. But what Ida said was, well, we want to launch this thing in January, and, you know, we think that your material might be better suited to an indoor context, i.e. not
outdoors.
Centaur. And of course, she was absolutely right about that, because as the title might suggest, it's actually a very confessional, intimate piece. So I was grateful for her better judgment there.
That was actress Amelia Sargeson from a conversation we had last January as she was gearing up to present a play that she has been working on during the pandemic. Amelia stars in Dara Tytle's play Behavior in a reading this weekend. Three live streams on Saturday and Sunday. Pay what you can. SiegelCenter.org for more information and for your ticket. We are just a week and a day away from the reopening of theaters, and I will be here to cover it. A reminder that our funding drive kicked off today. Call 514-448-4013 or visit ckut.ca to donate. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. A big thank you to Tamara at the station for making sure this show gets to air. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Until next time, stay home and stay safe.
CKUT is having a funding drive. CKUT is your community radio supporting events, culture, and shows, and playing the music you wouldn't even know you liked unless you heard it here. Give us a call, 514-907-9424, and give what you can.
Good evening and welcome to the March 18th edition of Gray Manners. Tonight is the first day of the CKUT annual funding drive, and we'll be asking you for your contributions to the station, helping us to keep CKUT functioning at its best over the next year. To contribute to the CKUT funding drive, you can phone us at 514-488-4013, or you can donate online at ckut.ca/donate. And of course, you can always mail your check to Radio CKUT 3647, University, Montreal, H3A2B3. I'll give you all that again in a few seconds. This year, we are celebrating the importance of having resilient grassroots media. Our goal this year is $25,000. Well, I hope while listening to this week's edition of Gray Manners, you consider contributing some of your hard-earned dollars to CKUT. That number, again, give us a call now. Operators are standing by. Is 514-448-4013.